This is a Pinball News production.
So, my relationship with the Avengers dates back quite a long time. In 1965, I was 10 years old, and this is kind of what I was reading. So I have a lifelong relationship, probably back to the time that I was 9 years old, with Marvel Comics. My mom used to send me to a barber shop around the corner from my house, and when I was a little kid, and I discovered two of my favorite things in life in that barbershop, and it wasn't getting my hair cut. One of them was Marvel Comics, and the other one was Playboy Magazine. So I used to take the Playboy Magazine and hide it inside the Boys' Life, because the Boys' Life had a bigger thing. And, I think all the guys in the chairs knew exactly what was going on, but to a nine-year-old kid in a barbershop, I'd never seen anything like that before. But I also discovered Marvel Comics, and one of the most exciting things to me about Marvel Comics is that up until that point in time, I had only been exposed to comics, DC's comics, and at the time, DC was in a little bit of a downturn, and the stories inside had seldom anything to do with the cover art. And there was like these just giant inconsistencies in the storylines, etc. And so in the world of Marvel, I discovered that there was a human characteristic, if you will, and also a little bit of science to go along with the fiction. And those kinds of things really sort of sparked my imagination. The notion that Spider-Man had real life problems that I could relate to. He fell in the East River and he had a store bought costume on and the costume shrank, right? Stuff like that is the stuff that made me grow to love Marvel, to the point where when I started buying Marvel comics, they cost 12 cents and they were sold at the newsstand. And I had a paper route. I would make my way over to the newsstand. I asked the guy, when do the new Marvels come in? And it was like every other Tuesday or something. And I would go, and a good portion of my paper route earnings would go towards Marvel Comics. So when the Avengers property came up, I don't know if you guys realize this, but I'm in my current role, I'm supposed to be helping the company in a different capacity. I'm supposed to be helping structure and guide our product development efforts across the board. I'm not supposed to be designing games. So I kind of raised my hand for this because I just had to do this. And you may or may not know this. I was telling someone, I said, maybe this is my black album. And you don't even know it. Maybe I can now retire from designing things because I haven't had this much fun, as much stress as it was to get Avengers done. And I know that you guys, especially some of you early adopters, have dealt with some of my problems with the game. And I hope you like them, and I hope that you're updating your games, and that you're getting whatever updates we release. Part of the rush and part of the problem was that I really wanted to get your games for Christmas, and I was really, really pushed to do that. But I thought it was significant to try to get you the games for Christmas. And so you're going to have to deal with a couple of ball traps and a couple of this and a couple of that. The guy back there shaking his head. He'd rather I kept it, huh? Well, these are some. It's too bad. You can't see this very well, can you? Okay. It's too bad. If you've seen me talk before, you know that I'm sort of an old-fashioned designer. I work in all the traditional tools as often as I work in the modern tools. And so I love my modern tools, but I also love my old tools. And so I start out sketching. These are actually 8.5 by 11 sketches of playfield layouts and things. And you can see that Widow ramp had a slightly different configuration than the one that you know. And these are very, very early. You can also see a couple of things that, like, you see this box right here, and you see this box right here. Remember those boxes, because we're going to talk about them a little later on. This is sort of a further evolution. This is now I'm in my CAD system, and these are snapshots from my SolidWorks model. This is the first game. When I did Transformers, I was partially in 2D and partially in 3D. The Avengers was done entirely in 3D from the ground up. You see some, this is a fairly late finished play field. This pretty much has things as you know them. This one is a little bit different. You see this box right here? And you see that box right there? So this was an underground lock. And that's where Loki balls were going to be locked. And so all the guys that are wondering, you know, why did he move the inserts underneath the ramp where you can't see them? Well, it's because the Loki lock was where the inserts were going to be. Can you see that? You see the insert string would have to go up above. You can also see that ramp, it's hard to see in this drawing because it's really dark. But you see where the four Hulk targets are in front of the Hulk there? Those were stand-up targets, and they were attached to the ramp. So before they were drop targets, the ramp, the targets were going to come up with the ramp. And that underground lock, this was a clear insert, so you were going to be able to see your ball underground. And then this thing was going to raise up, and you'd be able to shoot in it, lock three balls, and then at the appropriate time for the multi-ball, it was going to open up and fire them back out at you. And so it's very frustrating to me when I read the forums and I can't jump in and say, guys, the reason the inserts are where they are is because I used to have this device there and I had to take the device out. The device, by the way, one of the reasons it came out is because I had these two different lock techniques from the pro game to the limited edition game. So the pro game had the locks on the ramp, and the limited edition had the locks underground. And it was creating some issues with how the rules were handled in the game. It was creating some complexity in the software, and it was creating a lot of other things that were a problem. And so for that reason, that had to come out. You'll also see that there's a scoop right here. So, and there's a target here. So when the four Thor targets would be knocked down, you were going to hit this target, go into the scoop, and it was going to fire you back up into the ramp and bring the ball around. Okay, and that the reason that came out is because, as much as it sounds like, wow, another cool thing to do, it was also a thing that really kind of got in the way of the flow of the game. So I did have this built, and we did whitewood this, and you may even see a picture of the whitewood later on with these devices. There's another interesting device here, and you can't see it too well. I'm going to show it to you later on, but look at that area right there. It used to be that you could fall in behind that, in front of that target, and there was a coil there. There was a kickback mechanism, and it would fire the ball out at the tesseract, and it would spin the tesseract for you. And again, that came out because it sort of slowed the game down. It broke the pace of the game, and the game has some flow that I really kind of liked. It's a different layout for me. One of the reasons it's a different layout for me is because I sat down I have every one of my games in my house. So I have the George Gomez collection is all in my house, along with one of the games that influenced me early on, Steve's Terminator 2, which I bought for my, I want to say it was my 38th birthday, with my own money, and I have a Medieval Madness because I think you guys know that I made the castle explode and Brian gave me one. So that's my game collection, a medieval, a T2, and then all of my games. And so I sat there, basically locked myself in my house for a weekend, and I played every one of my games. I did nothing else. I didn't draw any lines. I didn't do anything. I just played my games over the course of the weekend. I ordered Chinese. I ordered pizza. I told my friends, go away, and I just kind of immersed myself in my games. And I do listen to what you guys say, and so I tried to understand the complaints, and I tried to understand the things that people liked and the things that people didn't like. And at the end of my time, I saw some of the things that people were talking about in terms of the similarities in some of my layouts. And I decided that I had to sort of break out of that mold. Because as much as I consider a signature, we all have a signature. Steve Ritchie has a signature. John Borg has a signature. Pat Lawler has a signature. It's no different than a painter or a musician, right? So I have a signature, and some people like my signature, some people don't. But and by signature, I mean a set of signature things that we do when we approach a play field, and how we design it, how we lay it out, what we do with it. So at the end of that time, I decided that I've always been about optimizing every single inch of play field for a shot. And on this game, I said, I'm not going to do that. I don't care. They're complaining that they come out looking like a fan. You guys call them a fan, and the fan, you know, the notion that the shot all the way across in a fan, in an arc, is because the designer's working inside of 20 and a quarter inches, and, you know, he's got some lateral movement this way, but the shots can't come too far down or you can't make them. They get really hard. So in an effort to kind of break out of the fan, I did this. And it seems like people like it. So here's some other shots. This one, you still can't see it. It's really bright on my screen. It's really dark up here. Here you begin to see, I don't know if you can tell, but the Hulk was created entirely digitally. He was not sculpted by hand. He was sculpted inside a computer and produced that way. And you can see some of the facets in the polygonal model. And I wish you could see it on my screen because it's like so crisp and clear. There's another thing that you should notice here, and that is that Loki's in the right corner. You see that? Loki, interestingly enough, he proved to be a bigger challenge than I imagined. Originally, he was on that side because it was about trying to relate the three lock lights with where the ball was going to be locked. So he was over there, and then we decided, you know what, he's kind of blocking the back panel, he's blocking Iron Man. Let's move him over to the other side. So we moved him over to the other side. That was on the pro. On the LEs, God, this is horrible. Okay, on the LEs, we determined that he was too far removed from the locks and that we should move him closer to the lock. So we moved him closer to the lock after much debate. And it appears it was the wrong decision because everybody hates where he is. The good news is, you know, if you really want to, he's not really difficult to move, and you can probably move him back to that corner. But the only reason he was there was to try to associate the three lock lights with the physical lock. So this is a fully populated pro playfield in my CAD system. There's another interesting thing. I've gotten a lot of grief about the art on these guys. And I got to tell you, I played the game for a month and a half with the art on there internally, and I never had an issue with it. So I let it go, and it turns out that nobody likes it. So I'll never do that again, but I didn't perceive it. Everybody says, well, how could you not see it? Well, it just didn't bother me. I mean, I saw the light illuminated. I can, you know, and on top of that, things got lane changed, so you can move it around. So I thought, well, I'm tracking it. I know I got two lit. I know where they are. So it just didn't bother me, and I apologize for that. Apparently, it's bothered a lot of people. There's Loki again. A couple of other... This is horrible because you can't see anything, and I can't point anything out. You see there's a roof right here. You see that?
Yeah.
At the ramp there? So I had the roof on there, and at the last minute, we had built five or six games, and I was playing the five or six games, and the ball was working just fine. And I said, take the roof off. Maybe it was a bad decision, because some people have said, mine launches the ball out of the ramp. Some people have said, mine's fine. So I think it has a lot to do with how your plunger is set up, whether it launches it or not. Here's these ramps, which have also been controversial. I really like these ramps. They allow me to put art in places where normally I can't put art. In addition to that, they give me incredibly precise control of the architecture of the game. So a vacuum form ramp is kind of an imperfect thing. What happens is that the thickness of the material thins out, because the deeper the draw on the mold, the thinner the plastic. So as a designer, you can draw it consistently 100 thousandths of an inch thick, but that's not reality. Reality is that you can't predict how much it's going to thin out. You can take an educated guess, but you can't predict it. With this is a sheet of material that's cut by a laser, and then all of these ramps are assembled like a construction set, and I know precisely the dimension of the plastic at every point in the ramp. I know precisely how thick it is. I know precisely where it is. And in all of the transformers that we made, thousands of them, I called the parts department before I sat down to work on these ramps again, and I said, have we had any replacement ramps on transformers? And they said, no. In addition to that, we run life tests on these things to the point where if you break a ramp, you call us up, we'll replace the ramp. And I really like them because of the control that I get, and I like the fact that I can art them everywhere. There's a lot of misconceptions that I'm saving like gobs of money by doing this. I'm not saving gobs of money because I'm putting lots of gobs of labor into the assembly of these ramps, as opposed to a vacuum form ramp that comes in done, gets dropped into a game. These ramps require that somebody assemble them. This is one of the art. This is pretty final art. I just wanted to show you this. So when I was a kid growing up, Hawkeye was one of my favorite Avengers. And so I had this notion for the arrows and the inserts. And this is my note to Kevin O'Connor, who did the art on the playfield, that I wanted the thing. You know, if you look over here, which you can barely see it right there, you'll see the arrows. This is one of the early playfields, and the one thing I want you to notice is that there were speech balloons on the Avengers. See that? And they all said funny stuff. Marvel didn't think it was so funny. This is a back glass that you've never seen. And this is a back glass that you've never seen. And here's another back glass that you've never seen. And another one. So why do I show you this stuff? I show you this stuff because we don't typically just do a thing. We do it over and over and over again until we're happy with it. And then that's the thing we do. So I had a lot of fun with this. This was like one of the first things that I thought of when I was working on the game is I got to make the Hulk cool, and I got to make the Hulk the interactive thing in the game because he's got a personality. As much as I love the Avengers and I love the movie and the characterizations and stuff, I didn't think the plot of the movie was all that exotic. And there are some consistencies in Avengers fiction, like in any fiction, right? One of the consistencies in Avengers fiction is that you have to assemble the Avengers, and you have to focus the Avengers on a common foe. Because the Avengers are all egomaniacs, because they all have superpowers. And they don't get along, they always fight, there's always a fight between Avengers before they go fight the bad guy. So when we were doing the game, and we talked to all of the actors about getting their voices, getting their likenesses, all this kind of stuff, nobody wanted to do the voices unless we paid them, like, you know, truckloads of money. And truckloads of money we didn't have. So what we decided was that we should focus the feeling of the game on the pinball machine itself, right? That's why the pinball is about assembling the Avengers. And yeah, you get to fight Loki, and you get to battle the Hulk, but all the stuff, all the funny stuff the Avengers say is about the pinball. It's not about, you know, the storyline in the film. And so that gave us tremendous freedom, because it allowed us to write some really funny stuff for the Hulk and some really funny stuff for some of the Avengers, and to create these, like, you know, there have always been these mythical kind of part of the fiction is that, you know, Thor talks funny. And he says a lot of stuff. He's always talking. He's always yakking, right? And so we just kind of had fun with that. We just said, you know, yeah, absolutely. Let's make Thor say some of the things that he says in the game. And if you've listened to some of those lines, you know, I get a lot of pleasure out of watching somebody play the game and then and having them hear something that, you know, that makes them laugh and brings a smile to their face, because that's really the fun of, you know, that's part of the fun of pinball. That interaction, that creation of those characters, and sort of the fact that they are focused on the pinball game, and they're, you know, the pinball game's about the pinball. It's not about some storyline fiction. You'll also notice that all the dots, 100% of the dots, are custom animations that we made for the game. There's nothing that was digitized from the film or anything like that. It basically, we said, you know, let's just have fun with the Avengers. We have to stay true to who they are, but let's just make them interact with each other, interact with the pinball machine, interact with the player. So this is some of my early Hulk mock-ups. These are white plastic mock-ups. You'll see that the ramp had a slightly different configuration. The turn in the ramp occurred flat to the floor. And then the ball went up the ramp. There's a top view. So imagine that, you know, imagine that this would have been a ball guide. So the ball comes in flat on the play field, and then it begins climbing up the ramp. At this particular moment in time, again, the targets were going to move with the ramp. So this is my very early hand-built mock-up, right? And the one thing that you might want to notice, I was thinking about cutting this area out on the playfield and making it green acrylic, clear green acrylic, like he was standing in a pool of water, of green water, and you could see down in, you know, and you could see his feet and his legs and everything, and he was sitting in a bunch of rocks. Again, if you could see this, you'd see that these are my early hand-built mock-ups just to prove the concept. A lot of times I go from sketches to what I call three-dimensional sketches. These are three-dimensional sketches. I'm gluing stuff together. I'm screwing things, you know, together. I'm trying to make it work any way that I can. And then when I get the engineers involved, these things really tell the tale, right? They right away, they understand clearly what it is that I want to do. There's no mistaking the intent. Now, here's an early Hulk. You see his face is different, and you can see that I'm fooling around with how he interacts with the ball. This is three-dimensional. That is the final Hulk model, or almost final Hulk model. Right, that's a render right out of the computer. And these are called turns, because basically they're turns on the body. One of my favorite cabinets of any pinball machine that I've ever worked on, you know, when we did this, interestingly enough, the sales guys were very scared of this. They thought that, you know, they were really scared of the green. They were like, wow, green, man, it's a green game. I don't know. And I was like, yeah, it's a green game. These, if you could see them, you'd see my mechanical engineering team standing around a whitewood with a high-speed camera. So one of the things that we do, and it's not really, you know, most people aren't aware of this, but how we check tricky kinetics on the playfield is with a high-speed camera. Because what happens is that we digitize this film and or this, you know, these movies that we take, and we can study them in slow motion. So when, you know, somebody calls you up and says, you know, the ball, like when I started getting complaints about the ball not going up the Black Widow ramp and rolling back, and the very first thing I did was put a high-speed camera on the thing and see, okay, what exactly is happening? What's it hitting? Etc. And so if you got your update, if your game's updated, you'll see that it works much better, and that's because I found out that unless the ball was on the edge of the ball guide, riding the ball guide, if it was in the middle of the ramp, it would loft and it would hit the roof and the roof would kill it. So this high-speed camera work is tedious, but whenever things are tough, we do it. We go right to it, and I make the guys do it. This is that whitewood I was talking about. You can see the clear window, you can see the target, you can see the buck, you can see the flap on the playfield. You can also see the kickback right here with this where the ball fell into, right? That's the Nick Fury target. So, you know, you would just fall in there. It was a shot you couldn't shoot. And of course, the minute that I created a shot that I couldn't shoot, all the pro players in the building were attempting to shoot it. So you had every guy in the building was like trying to hit that rubber to get into that hole. Like, you know, I mean, I had linemen standing there like endlessly. I can get in there. Sure you can. Sure you can. Have a good time. So, by the way, that's also how they shot. That's how that hole came to be. Was the notion of a shot that you couldn't really directly shoot, or that you could, and originally that was gonna, there was never going to be a drop into the hole. It was just going to be out in the open play field, and then at the end, you know, very late in the game, I decided, oh no, we can't do that, because if we're going to put something valuable there, we got to give a guy a chance to get it. So real significant about that. If you don't have the update plastic on your Widow ramp, you need to get it, because it really makes a huge difference. All I did was reduce the diameter of the ball so that when the ball goes in there, it toilet bowls and it drops straight down, and then it stays in the eject. So I was at a collector's house not too long ago, and he says to me, "I want you to sign my Hulk." And I said, "I already signed your Hulk." And he said to me, "No, I want you to sign it for real." And I said, "Well, it is signed for real." He did not realize that I sign 100% of the limited edition games. So he thought this was like some sort of a printed signature because it was below the clear coat. That's not the case. And all of the Stern designers will tell you that it's a real joy as your game is hitting production. You have to go out to the cabinet house to sign your playfields every morning at the crack of dawn, at a time when you know the last thing you need in your life is another thing to do. You got to go sign these playfields. So that's me signing the playfields for real. They get signed before the hard coats go on, so that they survive. I don't know if you've ever seen our factory, but this is a real pinball factory. This is what real pinball factories look like. They're populated. They're a beehive of activity. They're not pretty. They're effective. And so, you know, I just want to show you the hustle and bustle of this factory is one of the most exciting things to see. You know, there's a bunch of blues and a bunch of greens and a guy working on a back box and, you know, games being built. Lots of activity, lots of stuff. There's a box of Hulks. There's some parts. And everybody seen the little game that we introduced this year? The pin, the consumer-oriented game. That's what these are. These are that's a bunch of the pins going together, pin playfields. There's an Avengers version for the pin that you're going to see real soon if you haven't already, and that's the little Hulk for the Avengers, and that's a little Avengers playfield with the Hulk in the back. It's basically the same playfield I did for Transformers because I was a little busy this past year, right? I had to do the pin platform and two playfields and, you know, four versions of the Avengers. So because of that, the two playfields are very similar. The pin Avengers is very similar to the pin Transformers. We took these little games to the CES show, and we got a reception unlike any that we could have possibly imagined. When I tell you that we were there a week and that the booth was mobbed 8 hours a day, I mean, I'm not kidding, mobbed. Like, I've never seen a pinball show, even in the heyday of Williams Electronics when I worked there and we were selling, you know, 50,000 pinball machines a year. I never saw a pinball booth. I never saw a booth. There were lines to play these games 8 hours a day. The games, there was three Avengers and three Transformers, the little games, the pins. Gary and I must have done, we probably, between the two of us, I'm sure we did something approximating 100 interviews, press interviews, etc. So we got a tremendous response to this product because of the price point, because of the fact that I think people inherently want to love pinball. And so this is an ancillary product line to us. This is new business. This is a different market. This is about teaching people pinball. It's about evolving, a new generation of hobbyists, and it's about creating something that not everybody can afford. I mean, these games cost one half of our commercial games. So our cheapest commercial game is $5,000, and these things are going to retail for $2,500. And if I can help it, they're going to retail for $2,000. But working on it. So this is a new line of products. It has different requirements, different characteristics. But the important thing is that we're very focused on making sure that it feels like a pinball machine, and that it plays like a pinball machine, and it. You know, it's not intended to replace the games you love. Avengers launch party. This was a couple of weeks ago at a place in Chicago called the Emporium, which is a phenomenal bar that has where the theme of the bar. It's what's, you know, there's this rage right now for these barcades, which are essentially bars where the aesthetics of the bar are games, and so. This is a game, this guy's got like 40 old school 80s upright video games, and he's got a bunch of our pinball machines in there. And so we brought in a bunch of Avengers through the launch party there. You can see the bartenders wearing a Stern, all the bartenders wearing Stern t-shirts, and basically it was a really fun night. They have a collection of craft brews and games. Also that night, so here's the bad thing about going to an Avengers launch party in Chicago. You get guys like Josh Sharp, one of the best players in the world, so, you know, your tournament is automatically skewed a little bit. So Josh wins the tournament. And it was an interesting night for me, too, because in the room, along with my Avengers, was a game I did when I was 26 years old. And I thought, how cool is this? There's people actually playing that thing still, all these many years later. And then Gary went skiing. So this is I just had these photos and I thought it'd be funny to throw them in here. This is Gary on a snowboard. Gary is the oldest guy on the mountain, you know, on a snowboard. He gets a lot of props from the young guys. He was the oldest guy at snowboard camp. And, you know, as you can see, you know, all white every day, you know, the white sunglasses, the whole thing. This is in Vail. Okay, and now we're going to play a game called What is Steve Working On? All right, so you guys make a choice, okay? Is it Lego Star Wars? What do you think? Is it Star Wars 7 with J.J. Abrams? No? Is it ZZ Top? No? Come on, it's Texas. Don't you want it to be ZZ Top? Is it Justin Bieber? Which is it? All right, let's do this a different way. Which one do you want it to be? ZZ Top? Steve, there you go. Thank you, Texas. Okay, bring it on. What do you got? Yes, sir.
Just getting back to your comment about the plastic ramps on Transformers, I have three, and they're always a pain in the ass. You have to adjust the ramp. Because when the ball launches, sometimes you get trapped up the top.
Okay. Trapped, or, but I mean, you didn't break the ramp, did you?
No, but you have to adjust it. If you were an operator, it would drove you crazy, because like the ball would get stuck there, and people would just walk away from it.
Okay, send me something, and I'll send you a fix. Okay. Anybody else? In the orange, in the back.
On the small fins, what is the cabinet made out of, and where are the legs on the inside?
So the cabinet construction, it's what's called KD construction. So it's knockdown. So it comes in the flat. It's powder coated MDF, which is a fairly exotic finishing technique for the United States. Not much is powder coated. Not much MDF is powder coated, because powder coating typically means changing the electrical charge of the part in order for the powder to stick to it. And MDF is basically a wooden paper product, right? So, and the legs are on the inside primarily because that product, being as price sensitive as it is, needs as few parts as possible, and so the legs are part of the structure of the cabinet. So the four corners of the cabinet are essentially tied together with the steel of the legs.
George, you showed several of the Ekblast graphics that were great. I mean, a lot of them were, all of them were really, really nice in my opinion, but has Stern ever considered offering, not as an option, but alternate back glass for sales and afterwards,
we've talked a lot. We're actually talking a lot about the potential for, you know, custom parts from us, and so you may see some of that in the future. We love that people are customizing games. You know, I love walking out there and seeing all the stuff that guys do with our games. And there's a lot of stuff that, you know, we leave on the cutting room floor, if you will. And, you know, people may like it. Like, you know, if you wanted one of those back glasses, yeah, that, you know, we could do a run. You notice that we just did something special for the Trons we just made, right? That was an idea that had been kind of floating around for a long time. You know, hey, we should do a girls' version of the, you know, what focus on the girls in Tron. John had, the designer, you know, John Borg had the images of the girls, the black and the white suits in his office. And so that kind of inspired that conversation. You know, at one point, there was thought that we were going to split the cabinet black and white.
So if Steve's doing ZZ Top, who's doing Lego Star Wars and Star Wars X?
I'm going to raise my hand for Lego Star Wars.
the weekend you spent playing your games, what was the best single game you played?
You know, that's tough because the games that I own, my own games, you know, my favorites are what I consider the most complete packages, and I games are. Our designers are so passionate about what they do that they can't make a game without whatever is happening in their lives at that particular moment in time influencing the game. It's just impossible because they live the game. The game is their life over that period of time. So, and if good things are going on in your life, you remember the game fondly, and if bad things are going on in your life, you remember those challenges. And so my favorite of my games is Monster Bash, right? It's a really fun product, and I had a very inspired team. And so every guy that worked on that game was very inspired, and it comes through in the game, right? It's very, very clear that that's what was going on. So I like that game a lot. I also like, you know, I mean, I like some of the ones that no one likes. I love Johnny Mnemonic. You know, I love that whole Power Down thing. That was my idea, and I seldom get there because I'm not that level of player. But when I do get there, it's a really special event, and I really like it. So I think that my best shooting game is probably Johnny, and my most fun game is Monster Bash. Although I'm kind of addicted to Avengers LE, and I've been Lonnie has an Avengers LE in his office, and I play that thing almost every day. And so it's rare for me to. Especially after I finish a game. After I finish a game, I don't want to see it for a long time. And I come back to it. And so I've been really enjoying Avengers. So I think Avengers is going to be right in there with my favorite games for a long time.
I've played the Hulk LE in the game room a couple times. Where the ball lock is on the right hand lane, the ball gets hung there. Is that something y'all fix?
On the, tell me where again? On the ball lock?
With the plastic ball lock sticks up, it locks the ball before it drops it down in.
Yeah, so there are two fixes there. There's,
it's unlocked several times this whole weekend already.
Yeah, there's two fixes for that problem. One is, on some games, it tends to hang on the screw heads, and there's a decal that we've made. And some people tell me that the decal moved the ball trap up. But if it's which Hulk is it?
One of Marco's boots.
I'll take a look at it.
It's hung several times. And it,
yeah, I'll take a look at it.
It looks like maybe the plastic is too narrow. The ball
it could be. Stuff. It could be.
Hey George, any chance that we can go back to like the single lever instead of the latch system and get rid of the tags on the roll laws?
Yeah. I mean, it's just a price thing. It's just a cost thing. You know, we're trying to make the pros as competitive as we can without taking game content out.
But so is that's, it really cost effective? Like, is it like $20 to upgrade these pins?
To upgrade them?
After, you know, to have a lever instead of two latches on the lock bar and get rid of the pegs and have a select
Obviously the basset clamps are cheaper than the lever by a lot. Otherwise we wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't make any sense.
But do you have any idea, like, how much does it cost to make two sliding rails? It can't cost that much money.
Oh, it does. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's no, you know, yeah, there's no question. The most price-sensitive product we make in the commercial world is the pro product, because people in Europe especially, not so much in this country, but in Europe especially, that's a viable operation. That's a product people operate. And so they're all about ROI, and they do not count the price of the game in their ROI. You guys do stateside, but in Europe, that's not a factor. In other words, a European customer, when he talks ROI, he doesn't talk the $1,500 that he's got left at the end of his operation, the life of that game means nothing to him. Do not count it. It's what's in the cash box. How quickly do I recover my money relative to the price that I paid for the game? That's the only thing that matters. Nothing else matters.
I see a lot of new technology being integrated into games, you know, especially with a lot of the boutique makers that are out there now. From Stern's standpoint, and you can speak generally about it, you know, looking for trade secrets or anything, but, you know, is it something where, you know, you guys are going to kind of keep pace with some of the technology that's out there, but, you know, are we in 2, 3, 4 years looking at a pinball machine that's going to be vastly different, you know, looking or operating from what we're seeing today?
So as far as technology goes, right now, one of the things that we're doing, we're redoing all of our platforms. And what I mean by that is that very soon you'll see a new hardware set, you'll see new displays, you'll see improvements in quality in terms of the cabinet, you'll see improvements in serviceability in terms of the cabinet. I firmly believe that the flippers and the ball are constant, and you will never see us interested in anything that makes that go away or diminishes that in any way. I think pinball machines will still be about what's under the glass. I think that we will continue to be focused on mechanical action pinball, but I think that the underpinnings of the machine, the hardware set that we have right now, is by far the one that we're working on right now, is by far the most powerful pinball hardware in the world, bar none. Absolutely bar none. Anything that's on the floor is numerous generations beyond what you're going to see from us in terms of the next hardware set. So, but it's not about, like, you know, the fancy technology. It's about what we can do with it, right? It's about the power that the fancy technology gives us and the improvements in reliability that it's going to bring us. It's not about, it's, in other words, you know, we're not doing it just because we need new fancy technology. We're doing it because we want to make the game more reliable, we want to give the designers more horsepower, and, you know, we need to make the games more viable. So, I mean, that's all of our improvements on the platform, are the cabinet, etc., that's what they're focused on. You have to remember that we have legacy stuff. I have legacy ball launchers. I have legacy cabinet stuff. I have legacy legs, legacy everything. And I have a business. I'm a going concern. I have pinball machines have to go out my door every day, our door every day, in order for us to remain alive and healthy. And so it's introducing new technology, introducing changes to the core system is not something that you do with the wave of your hand. So it takes us a long time, because if you're going to make those changes, you have to be sure they're right. You know, Gary calls them bet the farm changes. And so right now I have so many bet the farm initiatives that I have to get them right. If I don't get them right, they directly impact our business.
So you mentioned earlier about the unmakeable shot, and I assume that that's how you came about the extra ball shot in the LE, because it's an unmakeable shot. It doesn't drop, the diverter doesn't drop down, so it's almost an accident if you hit it.
No, the diverter should drop it down. The diverter will divert it. If the extra ball is lit and you make the shot, it's going in there.
Oh, I've got a problem.
Right.
Is it still taking you 9 months to do a game, or do you look at
that? Yeah, it depends on the game, and it depends on a lot of things, but somewhere between 6 and 9.
How long did it take you to do Avengers?
Avengers was a quick one, probably about 6.
Yeah.
Almost everything you guys have done in the past several years has been a licensed theme. You mentioned earlier Monster Bash is one of your favorite games, and it's not a licensed.
Yep.
Well, I mean, I guess it is a licensed.
No, it's what I call a soft license, meaning that the, yeah.
But are there any plans to ever do another non-licensed game in the future?
If I have anything to say about it, yes. And so the problem that we have is that Especially, you have to think about where we've been in the last 5 years. And so, you know, in 08, we were almost completely out of business, right? And so the issue that we have is we have three bullets a year. And every bullet's got to count. Nobody can miss their mark. Everybody has to have impact. So when you're working with those characteristics, you basically try to roll the dice in the way that is going to give you the most bang for the buck. And it's hard for us, a little company, it's hard for a little company like us to compete with a $35 million advertising package from a movie, right? So when Gary walks into the French distributor and he says, I've got a game, you know, about a guy and a girl who stole a car and they're going across country, he says to him, what movie? And Gary says, it's not a movie. It's like, you know, some wacky idea that Steve Ritchie had. And the guy says, okay, send me one. And then when Gary walks in and he says, I've got, you know, Iron Man 3, the guy says, oh, I'll take 300. So it's kind of, you know, that being said, I believe that once we get some air, once we get some breathing room, we will definitely go there. And actually, we have something right now that is not, you know, it's not a license. So, you know, hopefully you'll see it soon.
Did you have Steve sign your T2?
Sorry?
Did you have Steve sign your T2?
Did I have Steve sign my T2? No, you know, Steve... Steve gave me, Steve, when Steve left Williams, he was emptying out his office, and he had this, back in the day when we used drawing tables, he had a piece of Mylar with, the prescribed Steve Ritchie pop bumper array, you know, drawn on it, right? And he would always start by sliding that thing underneath his drawing, and then he would trace around, and then he'd move something from there, but that's where he started, you know? It was like the, you know, and it was like the golden mean in architecture, right? It was like, you know, it was like, it was sacred, you know? It was like, and so he was like, hey. So he like, you know, he says, here, you want this thing? So yeah, that's as close to a Steve Ritchie signature as I have. It's the pop bumper array that was used on T2.
Transformers just came out with the 1.8 software.
Yeah.
There's no release notes yet.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Do you happen to know what the major updates are?
Yeah, mostly the stuff that people wanted. Multi-ball progression is the big one. There are some new, there's a Decepticons high score table, Autobot high score table. It's things that people asked us for a long time. It's not going to turn your, you know, it's not as robust as the Avengers update where, you know, we had like 3 pages of release notes. But there's some fun stuff in there.
Are you all aware that disabling extra balls for primitive mode in Avengers is not
No, I wasn't aware. I'll talk to Lonnie about it. Anybody else? Yes, sir.
What's next for you? What are you going to design to?
Oh, I don't know yet.
It's in your blood.
I think probably like Lego Star Wars. Anybody else?
How big's your basement or whatever for more games?
You know what? They're in my living room, and I'm out of space. Yeah, I have a wall. I have like a 22-foot wall or something, and so I have all my stuff. But as of right now, in order for me to bring the green guy home, I have to move something out. So I think my nephews. I'm the oldest of seven, so I have a lot of brothers and sisters and nieces and nephews and stuff, and so everybody loves to get my games that I can't fit anywhere. Like I had two Batman, right? I had like the, you guys know I did that standard stripped down Batman, and then I did the full on Batman, right? And so I auctioned. I gave one of my Batmen to a charity for a silent auction this past summer. So that's the only game I don't have anymore.
I've got rid of that medieval Batman.
Yeah. 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 I'm sure you do. Ed was asking me the other day, I guess Ed's trying to build one, and I said, you know, Ed, I've got the AutoCAD drawings, and he says, you do! And he says, all right, anybody else? Okay, thanks very much.